accession number 19093, Reel 2.
Maurice Crowther, Reel 2. You were just telling me what this chap wanted.
All he wanted was this 8 piastres of beer, which was quite good beer compared to the local brew. It was Canadian. It was shipped all the way from Canada. And it was, we couldn't afford to buy it really. But the thing was, the soldiers used to think, well, I can get drunk on one bottle of that, whereas the Egyptian beer was, you know, very weak, and that you probably want 5 or 6 bottles. So the cheapest option really was to buy that. But there's always plenty of it on sale in the NAFE, and he used to ask us to get him. That's the only thing he ever asked us for. And we used to go across there and have tea and everything. And then we used to go into Cairo, into the bars and that. Into the...
How did you get on in the Cairo bars?
Oh, no problems, no problems, no.
Did you ever come across any hostility from Egypt?
No, he took us to where there was less, because there was always a lot of troops on leaving Cairo. He would, in other bars where the troops didn't frequent, if that's a word, isn't it? Yeah.
So you were with this 16 battery in various places in Egypt.
Yes, that's right.
What else happened?
What else happened? Well, what happened then? Well, eventually, due to manpower shortage, we was what I call blacked out, and we were getting the coloured people from South Africa to go on the guns, Bechuanas and Basutos. They manned the guns. This was when we was in Port Said. That's the entrance to the Suez Canal, as you know.
So they took over your battery, did they?
They took over the gun side, the guns of it, yeah. And then Church was involved with the Turkey, as you know, and he wanted them to come into the war. And they said, if we come into war, we want you to take the islands adjacent to the Turkish mainland, Kos, Leros and Samos, you know. And this is what they tried to do, and they failed miserably. But meanwhile, what was planned, we were going to the Turkish cities as anti-aircraft to protect them. And we had 200 guns all ready to go in. And we was all what I call white personnel. But this time, a lot of the batteries had been got the native troops in. But obviously, the Turks didn't want coloured people to go into Turkey. So that'd be all white personnel. And eventually, it folded up. Because, as you know, the tide turned at Stalingrad. And Churchill more or less said, well, you people in Turkey are going to be wanting more than what we're prepared to provide. And it folded up, the whole scheme. But it was intended that we were going to Turkey to defend their cities.
How did you and your comrades fancy that idea?
Well, I don't suppose they objected, really. You know, it's something new, wasn't it? Yeah. I know it never materialised. We was in camps at various places. Went up to Tripoli, where they intended to ship us across to Italy. I don't know. Not at that stage. Then we came back. And then was made into infantry. Was surplus to requirements. Because we had, in those days, at the last end of the war, we had what we call air supremacy. We didn't require all these guns. And there was push for men for infantry.
Which unit did your men form?
Well, they were given a choice, and we opted for the 2nd Seven Queens. Went to Div headquarters. and said, what would I like to be in? And he read all these units off, Oxen Books, London Scottish, London Irish. And Oxen Books were light infantry, as you know. So we said, oh, we're going to the Queen's, and that was 2nd, 7th Queen's.
But how did you decide which one to choose?
Just well, we didn't want to be with the London Scottish or London Irish. We preferred, the Queen's. I think we originated from Kent, didn't they not?
Well, the Queen's Regiment are the West Surreys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't all the case. Throughout the war, you got people of all throughout the UK in different regiments. Anyway, that's the one we selected to go in.
Were they mostly Southerners in the unit when you got to it?
Yes, mostly, yeah. Mm.
Do you know when this was that you became an infantryman?
Let me see now. It would be about, I would say about February 44.
And where did you find the unit?
Near the pyramids. Cowley Camp, near the pyramids, a huge camp.
Cowley?
Cowley, yes.
What state were they in by the time you got to them?
What's that? What state was what?
What state was this unit in by the time you got to them?
Virtually non-existent. They'd just come back from Anzio, and very few of them left really in the infantry units. I mean, it was virtually all new personnel. Because I said, there's one fellow we found in the lines. And I said, where's the rest of the men? And he was quite a sombre character. He said, killed, wounded and missing. Oh, I thought this is a gang carry on. But eventually, quite a few of them came back. We'd been in hospital, been wounded and we'd recuperated. Yeah.
Did you have to have special infantry training there?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we did all that round in Cairo, round in the desert, yeah.
What did that consist of?
Everything. A lot of rope marches, yeah. It was you started off doing 5 miles, then 10 miles, and then 30 miles.
And how did you cope with it?
Splendid, yeah, no problem. We were all fit and young, weren't we? Yeah. After each march, the officer would inspect your feet personally, you know, to see they were okay.
And then what?
Then we went across to Italy in August.
What kind of journey did you have to Italy?
It was on a troop ship called, now then. Oh dear. They have a fleet of them. A castle boat. A Durban castle, I think it was. It was a castle boat, anyway.
Where did you land in Italy?
Where did we land? Taranto.
And then what?
We stopped there for a few weeks, and then we went up to a place called Vasto by rail. On the Adriatic.
Vasto.
That was what they call a core reinforcement camp. That was for the front line, for the divisional. Core reinforcement. CIO.
What did you find there?
That was further training.
What form did that training take?
pee up mortars mostly, which I didn't like, you know.
Why didn't you like them?
Well, that if you had people operating them, it was weren't fully experienced. It could be very dangerous. We used to put them on the edge of a ravine and fire them to the ground below. You know, there was no danger. You know. Then we got some 3-inch mortars, which were much more easy to deal with. The Piat was an anti-tank weapon. And then there was obviously training with the Tommy guns and so forth, you know, the Thompson submachine gun and that. The main thing to watch with a machine gun is, you know, as you fired it, you know, don't press too much, so you'd lose all the round off and you'd nothing then to protect yourself. You have to learn to just ease it gently with short bursts, as you might say. And this is something you have to, a skill you have to acquire, otherwise you just took the old pan off, want a pan. It was a. And then, of course, there was training with the rifles, you know, the Lee Enfield.
Were you very long at this Corps reinforcement camp?
No, I can't remember really. Anyway, eventually I was taken ill and I'd got jaundice.
How did you get that?
I don't know. I think it's lack of good food, you know, lack of fresh food. It's a liver complaint. And I was evacuated. I went to... we'd moved up to a place called Jesse, that's right, Jesse, just below Rimini, well, way past Ancona, that was it, yeah. And from there, I was evacuated from Ancona to, by hospital ship, down to Barry.
Had you been in action at all?
No, not at that stage, no. That's what I'm saying. I didn't capture an old German unit.
Don't worry about that.
If I hadn't have got jaundice, as you might say, I probably wouldn't have survived, who knows.
Where were you evacuated to?
To Barry. Barry, in southern Italy, by hospital ship.
What were conditions like in the hospital ship?
Oh, fine, lovely, yeah. Because it's not... jaundice isn't in itself a... You know, it doesn't... Well, it is serious in a sense, but it doesn't put you out, does it? No.
What treatment were you getting for the jaundice?
Ah, what treatment? They put you on a no-fat diet. This was in this hospital. And they bring everything in and wave it in front of you, and then they say... Oh, you're the jaundice patient, and then they bring a little bit of fish or something, and they put you on a no-fat diet, and it seems that everything has got fat in it, and that sort of cures you eventually. And you have an enormous appetite after that. And when the doctor came round, he says, have you any problems? I said, yes, I always seem to be hungry. So we'll put you on a TB diet. And I was still hungry after that. And this is the after effects of the...
Did you make a full recovery from the jaundice?
Yes, I hope so. They discharged me.
And then what?
Then what? We went to what they call a reallocation centre, where you're allocated to a unit. And the next stage was we went to 3 transit camp in Naples, number 3 transit camp, Naples. And they said we'll be going to Greece to act as guards for ammunition dumps and so forth. Then one day, I wasn't very happy about wanting to go to Greece because the British were trying to reinstate the monarchy and the communists were opposed to it. And there was these two, is it fractions?
Factions.
Yeah. And I thought, well, you won't know, so will you? So one day they said, we want 200 reinforcements for the army post office. And we all thought it was a joke. And I said, well, I'll make one. And I went to the army post office in Naples. That would be about October 44.
Were you interested in politics at all at that time yourself?
Not in a sense, really, no. And that's how I finished my army service in the post office.
What? It was called the Army Post Office, was it?
It was called the 5th, 5 BAPO, they called it, 5 Base Army Post Office. 5 BAPO. They were mostly men from the post office in London. From Mount Pleasant, that's a big depot in London, isn't it?
Yes.
And but it was such a huge complex, so we needed all these men to sort out the mail business, you know.
Where were you doing this, in Italy?
In Naples. This huge hangar it was, like a big hangar. It was all of what we call seaborne mail, you know. Parcels, cigarettes and so forth. And personal presents and that.
So you just had to sort out the mail, did you?
Yeah, what happened? Each bag was addressed to the Army Post Office. Then you unseal that, and inside, for security units, there was the address with the labelling of the unit it was going to. That was for security. And then you would look at a list and find out where that unit was, and each unit had a code number. And it would go to the various, what we call, relays. What do they call that unit? They had a special name for it anyway. Oh, we used to do hundreds of bags a night, you know. Bulk depot, they called it. Bulk depot, that's right. Oh, we had the Italian labours as well. And we was billeting in various hotels in Naples. Most of them were bombed out, you know, no windows in and so forth.
How did you get on with the Neapolitans?
Well, no problems really, no. They're always after bucksheesh, you know.
Did they get any?
Yeah, we're soft, aren't we?
Was the mail secure or did it ever go missing?
Mail secure?
The post.
You mean en route, do you mean? It was often sunk coming out by German U-boats. You'll get a message on orders, what they call surface mail, between a certain date has been destroyed by enemy action. So that parcel of what your mother had sent you was at the bottom of the sea somewhere. That's life, isn't it? But
did you get any queries or complaints from soldiers who were not getting mail from home, which they'd expected?
Well, they'd read orders, wouldn't they? You know, they'd read orders and say that so and so. Well, there was also an airgraph system, which was like, you know, you didn't necessarily need to write letters. You could have write letters home by. Like fax, it's like equivalent to fax in those days, wasn't it? It was, you wrote it out in big and then it was reduced in size and sent it by radio or some means or other. The mail got quite it got quite good at the finish, you know, it's quite professional. You know, he could get a letter within 2 or 3 days, which was quite good, really.
What was life like for you in Naples?
I enjoyed it, yeah. because the Americans had 2 or 3 cinemas there and you see all the latest films. The British only had one, and the Americans had their Air Force depots, you know, their base depots there, so there were literally hundreds of base personnel people there, so they'd, there were 3 cinemas to my knowledge. And there would be several rows at the front reserved for British personnel.
Was everything functioning in Naples, or was it in a devastated state?
Well, gradually, it just indicates the amount of help that the resource of the Americans was. Because when the Germans left, they took all the wires for the trams, you know, which are copper. And the Americans shipped it all in, and you could see it, and re-erected it all. You could actually give a tram driver a cigarette and it'd take you where it wanted to go, you know, when it first started up, because it seems everything was chaotic. Like, you say, you want to go to A bit, you want to go to A village, give me one cigarette. Because we had billets all over the Naples, and if you made your own way by tram, you know, it could do. It's hilarious, really. And you could see all this copper glistening in the sun. Imagine, because even at that stage, the British were running short of raw materials. Our cap badges, instead of being made of brass, which was traditional, made of plastic, yet the Americans could ship all this copper wiring, miles of it, to re-equip the Italian cities. You know, what it was, not UNRWA, like government, you know, military government, they were running the place, you know. Oh, they had to feed everybody and so forth.
So you were there from 44 to 45 in Naples?
Yes, yeah. Eventually they put me in charge of a billet where the soldiers slept, and I looked after the civilian labour.
Were you getting impatient to be demobbed?
Oh yes, yeah. Well, everybody was looking forward to being demobbed. I hated the guts at first, and I realised that they're only like us, weren't they?
Hated whose guts?
The Italians, yeah. Then I began to feel sorry for them.
Why did you feel sorry for them?
Well, they had nothing, had they? You know, in food line or anything. The Allies weren't interested in keeping, it was a matter of keeping them alive, wasn't it? And there was black market, you know.
What did the black market consist of?
Well, if you had plenty of money, you could buy almost anything. We had civilian labourers there, and I was always having to keep touching them. Come on, wake up, let's have some work out here. And we found out that the bulk of them were working for the... I was on night shift at the Army Post Office in this bulk breaking shed, that's what they called it, the bulk breaking shed, where all the mail was broken down, as they call it. And they was working for us at night, and then during the day they were driving the trams in Naples, so obviously they could hardly keep awake. And the total earnings of 2 shifts wouldn't buy the kiddies a pair of shoes. You know, whereas in England, you did have rationing to some extent, didn't you? And points and that. You know, well, this is the effects of war, isn't it? In a war, a country that's devastated by war, isn't it? And
So when were you demobbed eventually? Were you demobbed?
The following year, October, I think it was.
46?
Yeah.
So when did you come back to England?
46, sorry, yeah. 46. They kept me at last day, the very last day. Next day, a group, and I think a group 21 started, And I said to the officer, I said, you've kept me to the very last day. He says, yes, Crowley. He says, that's how much we value your services. Yeah. So that's it, isn't it?
What did demob involve?
We just went and selected the clothes and so forth, and that's it. We're outside the place at Woking, was it Woking, yeah? Somebody offered me one of these spivs, £5 for the whole issue, you know, which was a complete suit and a raincoat and a trilby hat and that. Well, I would want those ones, I wasn't going to sell those, were they? And when we was demobbed, they asked you, the last friend to ask you, he went round this room and he said, I know what your answer's going to be, but he said, I've got to ask you this, would you like to sign on again? So that was at Aldershot.
So what did you say? Were you polite?
No, because he was only doing his job, weren't he? Because everybody was looking forward to being demobbed. And we were supposed to be flown home, but the weather was too bad for flying. What they did, they just put so many men in a Lancaster bomber, and they would just follow the coastline up Italy, you know, all the way home. But owing to several days of bad weather, they sent us by rail, and I went all the way from Naples to Dover by rail, which was...
How do you feel now about having served in the Second World War in the army?
Well, look at to survive, aren't I? Because when a unit went into action, it's quite possible to lose a third in casualties. It's largely a myth about people fighting from Alamein to Berlin, because many of those people would probably be, killed or wounded, or because if you're wounded a certain degree, you're downgraded. You didn't go back into the line again. So probably only a very small percentage of those at the Battle of Alamein would actually get to Berlin. I'm talking about infantry units as well. I don't mean the supporting units, like